Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
All right. It's time for our weekly conversation with our baseball insider, Buster Olney. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
Well, we are stuck in this this cycle in Kansas City where by this time of year, we're giving standing ovations to prospects that get called up in the name of Vinny Pasquantino, because that's what we're cheering for is individual young pitchers or players. And then we celebrate milestones, too, of players that that are kind of towards the back end of their career, like Zach Greinke.
500 starts.
500 starts for Zach Greinke, and he got a win yesterday, Buster. And you watch this game, you study it. How significant is it for a guy in today's game to make that many starts in his career?
Yeah. Look, I mean, he's a dinosaur, just like Justin Verlander, right? he's the last that you're not going to see pitchers in the future rack up that many starts because of how the game's changed, unless they change the rules. Maybe they will. We've talked about that. I hope they will. But I was looking at it today, and Zach has had such an unusual career. And what a credit to, you know, the folks around him who I, you know, sure have really helped him get to this stage to be able to pitch with the issues that he dealt with early in his career. But for him to have over 3,000 innings, 500 starts, and clearly, I'm in a first ballot Hall of Famer. If you look at the numbers on Baseball Reference, career wins above replacement, which is how they count a lot of these numbers. He right now ranks 32nd all time, and the guy who's right next to him in that ranking 31st all time, is Clayton Kershaw. You know, his teammate with the Dodgers, his real good friend. He's not far behind Justin Verlander. He's ahead of Carl Hubble and Don Sutton and Jim Palmer, Ted Lyons, John Smoltz, Roy Halladay, Bob Feller. He's ahead of all those guys. And you know what those guys all have in common? They've already been voted to the Hall of Fame. I think I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago that the most anticipated Hall of Fame speech will be that of Dusty Baker, who has talked about smoking weed with Jimi Hendrix. You know, he was in the on deck circle when Hank Aaron hit the 715th home run. He was there for the Bartman game. He's seen everything and done everything in baseball, and so Dusty's going to make an amazing Hall of Fame speech. The shortest Hall of Fame speech might be that from Zach Greinke, which will also be very fascinating to watch.
Yeah, could just be a thanks, guys. See ya. That's kind of how it'll go for him. He just passed Pedro Martinez yesterday with wins as well. And I think if you ask most people, they would assume that Pedro Martinez probably had more than 219 wins. But, he was a shooting star for a while and didn't pitch as long maybe as some of these other guys. So I think Zach is definitely there. The one weird part, and you can help us with this a little bit more because this is voted in, the writers and all that stuff. And there are some players, like I always think when I look at a guy whose numbers, like WAR, deserve to be there. That's someone like Lou Whitaker is not in, but he never endeared himself to writers, so he never made it in. I mean, he's got an amazing career WAR. He's like right there with a lot of these guys, and he's not in there. Is Greinke's quirkiness endearing to writers? Will they see past, like, maybe he's not the most open guy to talk to? I mean, it's a weird openness. He's honest, but he's not going to give you a whole bunch of great stories about stuff. Will that hurt him at all when it comes to that voting part of it?
My sense is that writers have grown to have affection for Zach's quirkiness, much as it has happened with teammates. you know, when he was a young player, you'd hear stories like, what's up with this guy? You know, what's, and then as time went on, I think the people began to understand him better, and also to respect his consistency in this. It's not like, you know, and we've all been around players, media members, where they're one person to one guy, and then they're somebody else to somebody else, you know, to another person. In Zach's case, this is just who Zach is. And I've told this story before, and I'm sure you guys have told it, but it's worth telling again. You know, my favorite Zach story came from A.J. Ellis, a longtime Dodger catcher, who really respected Zach's mind and how it works, and respected Zach's understanding of baseball and team building. And so walked up to him in the dugout one day and said, hey, Zach, you know, you understand a lot about baseball. And, you know, if you're looking at this Dodger team, what would you do to make it better? And Zach gave him a look and, you know, said, I'm going to come back and give you an answer another time. And walked up to AJ after that and said, you know what I would do? I would replace you. Because of Zach, the fact that AJ was not a good offensive player. He didn't hit a lot of home runs. So as far as Zach could see, AJ was holding the Dodgers back because the Dodgers could get more offense out of his position.
You know? Honesty.
AJ laughed out loud. Clayton Kershaw laughed out loud. You know, when he heard that, because that was just classic Zach just being dead on it. And that's the way he always is when he does the interviews. He's not giving you the flowery stuff. He basically is telling you exactly what he feels, which is, I'm not really interested in this conversation most of the time.
But, you know, and if he gets a question that he finds interesting, he gives it a serious answer too. So yeah, then that's a serious answer, right? Like, yeah, you know, that's interesting. What would I do? And then he comes back and he tells him, yeah, I'd get rid of you. We got Buster Olney on the phone with us. That's great stuff. Buster, this ties into a conversation we've been having over the last couple of days. You know, we had three angry men sitting on the porch cussing at clouds yesterday when Boddicker was in with us, when we were kind of griping about state of pitching a little bit. We had Tom Glavine on yesterday, and he was great, by the way. But he said, look, I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but I don't like what I see when I watch baseball right now. You just told us pitchers aren't going to do what Zach Greinke's done unless they change the rules, because they don't let pitchers do what Zach Greinke's doing right now. And then, you know, Rob Manfred's on a piece that you guys at ESPN have put together where he's talking about trying to change the game of baseball and running into resistance because people say if you say these things, it means you don't like the game. And I'm just kind of curious where you see it headed. Do you think there are enough people in the game that see this and think things need to change to get some things done, or is it too split still? Because, boy, obviously the labor situation doesn't seem to be a situation where we're getting a lot of progress. Do you see enough people realizing agreeing that the game's not trending in the right way to make some real changes happen?
There's no question that privately they agree, right? I mean, when you have conversations, club executives, you know, they'll give you the rationale for why they've got 15 relievers on their roster, and then you ask the question, hey, you know, as a baseball fan, what do you think? And they'll go, I hate it. And you get that all the time. They don't like watching this. They don't like the maximizing of every piece of leverage, every statistical advantage, you know, calling guys up to minor leagues for 2 days, sending them back down because you want that specific lefty-on-lefty, you know, three-batter matchup you have with the team coming up. That kind of drives them crazy. The baseball fan in so many of these people wants to go back to the days when, you know, you had an ace like Tom Glavine, and you could throw him out there and have the storytelling that revolves around those players. We talked in the past about how, you know, starting pitchers need to be baseball's, you know, Hulk Hogan's and the stars of the game and people that who inspire fans to pick up, you know, to go to the website and say, hey, who's pitching today? Okay, let's jump in the car and go watch Brett Saberhagen. They need those guys. The sport needs it. They can't, you know, they, instead right now, with the pitching, they've got this parade of relievers, and I say, you know, with all due respect, guys who aren't going to be in the big leagues that long, because the way that pitchers throw today, where they're basically maximizing their velocity, you get so many injuries, and their time in the majors is so short that they don't really change the way the game goes. And it's interesting because privately, a lot of people in Major League Baseball's leadership at the team level, they want this to change. What I fear is, you know, and Rob and I are not friends, and I don't mean that we're, you know, have, you know, an adversarial relationship, but if he were to ask me, I'd be like, Rob, step out there, right? Like, get out there and lead that. You know, if it's going to take somebody to take the sport back to that time, but it's going to take somebody who's willing to take some arrows and slings and to be criticized by players, because let's face it, so many of the players in the game today are relief pitchers who are very outspoken about this. Rob needs to, I think, lead the sport and be willing to take a lot of the public criticism. The fact that, you know, Rob doesn't do a lot of media access tells you, I think he's a little, you know, he's a little affected by all the criticism he's taken a few years, and that really comes across in that piece by my colleague Don.
Yeah, Buster, it's interesting. We were talking to Glavin yesterday, and he, you know, he's like, listen, when I was pitching, and he pitched for 20-plus years, won 300 games, and started every fifth day. He'd go back and look. It's like led the league in starts all the time. He said, but even then, that's when they started pitch counts. And the guys from the generation before me, they're like, these guys are, they're weak, right? Because they're only pitching every 5 days, not 4 days. Glavin's point is, you do what you're managed to do. He said, I definitely could have pitched every 4 days. I would have had my body work that way instead of the other way, and you would have done that. So now we've told these guys that you have to do it this way. And I don't know how you can legislate that. I mean, you can't tell someone your starter has to go six innings, you know, I guess. It's just like it only takes one team to do it another way, and then everyone starts copying that one. I don't know how you get out of this hole.
Well, you do have to. You need major rule changes. And, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays are one of the most progressive and best organizations in baseball. The fact that, you know, every offseason, so many other teams raid their organization to hire front office people, coaches, managers, tells you how good they are. And they led this trend of, you know, essentially, you know, having a lot of bullpen-type games and not, you know, letting pitchers go beyond, you know, certain pitch counts. And so you give credit to that organization, and this is not at all criticism of them, but the folks in the game hate it. They truly can't stand the product that results. So there's one of two ways to do this, to change this. One, you have to limit the number of pitchers available on a, you know, major league roster every day. And along with that, by the way, you also need to make a rule about using position players as pitchers, which is getting to be ridiculous in how often that is used. And I think you also, you know, another way to do it, and this is something I've talked about, is to give a limit in the number of pitchers and managers can use in a given game. I think if you wanted to be aggressive, you would say four. I think a little bit more latitude, you'd say five. But I love that idea, and with obvious exceptions built in for injuries and for blowouts, right? So if, you know, a starting pitcher gets hurt, you know, has a comeback or gets hit in the hand, that obviously changes it. Maybe you add one. But what that would force, if you put a rule like that in place, you would force organizations to go back to training starting pitchers the way that it used to be under Boddicker, you know, when Tom Glavine was pitching. And I think that the sport needs that in terms of having being a product. Look, Madison Bumgarner is a dirty name there in Kansas City, but that was one of the coolest performances we've seen in our lifetime.
Sure.
And it was something people talk about for years. And last fall, you know, in talking with Bruce Bochy, who was Bumgarner's manager, he said to me, you know, that wouldn't even happen today. We wouldn't even know that was possible because no team would give him the opportunity to do that.
We're visiting with Buster Olney. Buster, this story with Freddie Freeman and his former agent now is fascinating. What do you make of it?
Yeah, and he the other day he dismissed his agent. He's now currently listed, at least the last time he checked, which is 24 hours ago, as being self-represented. And it comes out of his anger and disappointment for how his negotiations played out with the Atlanta Braves in the spring. Freddie's first choice going into those negotiations was he wanted to remain with the Braves. You know, he wanted to be their George Brett. He wanted to be their Tony Gwynn, Cal Ripken, the guy who stayed with one organization for his entire career. That was what his desire was. And yet, in the end, guys, despite the fact that the Braves were also interested in bringing him back, he wound up with a second choice, the Dodgers, for less money. Once you factor in the deferred salary at his Dodger contract, 57 of the $162 million is deferred, and you lost 13% state taxes. And so I think as Freddie has processed it since that negotiation played out, he's been essentially wondering, how was it that I wound up with the Dodgers? And I think all of that came to a head over the weekend with all that emotion in Atlanta. You guys saw the crying, you know, from his first press conference to being on the field. He's introduced. I think 10% of it was gratitude for Braves fans and how they've treated Freddie and his family. I think 90% of it was anger and sadness that he doesn't have the opportunity to have that legacy. So he fired his agent. Now, if Freddie, you know, and I know Freddie well, if we were close friends, I'd say, Freddie, you really should have been more involved in your negotiations to know day-to-day what was going on. But it also, from the agent's perspective, I don't know how it makes sense that he wound up with a second choice. And, you know, the agents are trying. It's XL, and he's the person who was the lead negotiator in that talk was Casey Close. They are trying to bring him back. There have been conversations that I know of in the last 72 hours because it's a really bad look for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand why Freddie's mad.
Yeah, Casey Close is he was Alex Gordon's agent. That's why I remember the name here, and when he got his deal signed with the Royals. But this is a
guy who spent his whole career in one town.
He did, but there wasn't a market out there. I mean, I think Alex Gordon thought he was going to go get a big deal somewhere, and there just wasn't a market for him. And anyway, that's another story. But I think this is a lesson for every player. I know we ask players all the time. I always leave that to my agent. I leave that to my agent. You should leave a lot of things to your agent, but if you really want to know what's going on, you have to ask the questions, right? You have to. You can't just assume they always have your best interest out there for you, because I think for someone like that agency, it may say, "Hey, we got this guy to the Dodgers, even though the Braves are the freaking world champions." I mean, there's something about L.A. and maybe the total number was a different number or something like that, where you can makes it look good or whatever, or maybe they just didn't like the Braves. You know what I mean? Maybe they got mad in some way, but you have to talk to your agent. You have to trust them. And you have to know that they know what you want. I mean, if all you wanted to do was stay in Atlanta, you should have told them, I don't care if it costs a couple million dollars less. I want to stay in Atlanta. So you got to have that trust. But this is a really bad look for the agency if it turns out that they weren't honest with their player.
Well, I don't know about that. And, you know, Casey put out that statement in response to what Doug Gottlieb tweeted out yesterday. And, you know, he referenced potential legal action. You know, Chipper Jones, I did a story in March in which Chipper Jones, you know, spent his whole life with the Braves, told me that he basically told Freddie last August, look, you better get this done. If you want to stay with the Braves, you better take control of this because once you get into free agency, Chipper told him you won't be back here because stuff will start to happen and it'll get out of your control and you're going to wind up with some other team. And, you know, that's the way that it played out. And I know that Chipper's criticism really bothered Freddie when that story came out in March. So I think Freddie absolutely, you know, needed to be more in control. But I also think on the flip side, on the agent side, the first question should be to a player, and maybe this happened, maybe didn't, I don't know, should be, Freddie, what do you want? And the answer, you know, should have been, would have been, I want to play with the Braves. And once that happens from an agent's perspective, you're empowered to basically at that point say, okay, Freddie, we're going to get you back to the Braves because they want you back. We'll do everything we can, smoke and mirrors, leverage, all that. We'll get your best possible deal with the Braves, but we're going to make sure we get you back there. That's what's surprising to me, that not only did he not wind up with his first choice, but when you, as I said, you factor in deferred money, state tax, he wound up with a deal for less money. It makes no sense.
Okay, so just in case people aren't keeping up with all this, yes, Doug Gottlieb, the guy that used to go on with Petro every week, the guy that had his shorts on backwards at Allen Fieldhouse one time. Did you know that, Marco, by the way? Yeah. I don't know if you know that, Buster. That was a funny moment when the fans were all
well,
chanting.
Well, I know Doug. Yeah. I know Doug, so it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. And very fun guy to be around. He was going on Jim Rome's show when he was in college. Yeah. He always had a future in sports media. But yes, former college basketball player Doug Gottlieb tweets out this thing that says, you know, Casey Close never told Freddie Freeman about the Braves' final offer. So Casey Close comes out, and here's his statement. Buster just kind of alluded to it. I mean, he says there's no truth whatsoever to what Doug Gottlieb recklessly tweeted, and I would testify to that under oath. We are currently evaluating all legal options in this matter. Would they really sue Doug Gottlieb over a tweet, or is this like a lawyer doing that whole thing where I'll sue you? You know, is that really where we're at in 2022, Buster?
Well, here's the reality of the situation. That agency, XL, is under siege a bit right now because Trevor Story, after he signed his deal with the Red Sox, there was some frustration on his part because he felt like, look, I wasn't told that I had to get vaccinated in order to sign that $140 million deal with the Red Sox. And so right after he signed with the Red Sox, he fired that agency, okay, which is led by Casey. And now this all this stuff has been swirling out there about Freddie. So I'm sure Casey, folks at XL feel like they're under siege and maybe they're trying to protect themselves, which is why part of the reason why I think behind the scenes they're working so hard to get Freddie back into the fold. When I saw Casey's statement last night, I'm like, you know what? He's feeling a little bit of pressure at this moment.
Yeah, it's rough. It's a dirty business because, you know, the players move. We've just gone through this here with Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs in Kansas City. When he was in college and had his legal issues, you know, Drew Rosenhaus didn't want anything to do with that guy, right? So then he gets good. Drew Rosenhaus signs him, and then now Drew Rosenhaus claims he's orchestrating trades in the National Football League. You know, it's just you got to watch the agent business, and for the most part, they have the best interest of players, but they're also it's a business. They have the best interest of themselves many times as well.
Well, the more money the player gets, the more money they get.
Exactly,
so.
And if you can get this deal with Boston in Story's case, and maybe you don't tell all the details of what it entails or whatever, and I think a lot of times players just don't get the fact that the tax thing. When you get to these big numbers like this, it's a big deal from state to state. And they have to pay taxes everywhere they play to start with. But if 80-some of your games are in California as opposed to being in Georgia, then it's a big deal when you're talking about $160 million.
Well, and I would say, again, if Trevor Story was a friend, I'd say to Trevor, look, Trevor, you may not have been happy about the fact you had to get vaccinated, and that was a requirement by the Red Sox because they have to play in Toronto.
Right.
And we saw that in their series recently that they had players unavailable because they couldn't go across the border. Trevor, like Freddie, in the end, it's his contract, it's his life. He didn't have to sign the deal that was $140 million. And, oh, by the way, there was a lot of concern. I know this firsthand, a lot of concern in the market about his elbow. I don't think there was any offer close to the Red Sox offer of $140 million, which is a hell of a contract.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, that's what separates it for Freddie from me. Look, Trevor, if the vaccination question, which is totally his prerogative, was that important, you know what? You could have walked away from the $140 million deal, and you didn't.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Buster, before we let you go, the New York Yankees have now won 4 in a row. They're up to 56-20 on the year. Todd brought up this question earlier in the week, and the question just becomes more and more fascinating because it was a couple days ago when they were at 54 wins, and he said, hey, when are the Royals going to get to 54 wins? I'm looking at it now. We're not even at the halfway point of the season. The Yankees are at 56 wins. The Royals might not get there.
They're pace for 58.5, 59 wins right now.
So, wow.
I mean, that put it in that perspective, that just blows my mind. But there have been obviously all-time great Yankees teams over the years. How does this one stack up to some of the all-time greats that we've seen before?
All right. I'm completely biased because I covered the 1998 Yankees for the New York Times. They won 114 regular season games, 125 games in all after they won the World Series. And I will tell you, I am not even close to being ready to compare this team to that team because I just know how long this journey is.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to keep up that pace the whole year, and there are absolute pitfalls ahead. As with every team during the course of the season. That 98 team was rolling, and then they started to slump in Tampa. They had a terrible game. They threw the ball all over the place, and Joe Torre went into the clubhouse and yelled at the players after and said, guys, you can't turn off and turn on your effort like a light switch. You need to step it up. Then they got into the playoffs. They were down 2-1 in the American League Championship Series, and the players were near panic because they understood everything that they had accomplished in the 6 months before was about to become irrelevant if they had been knocked out. They needed to win the World Series to finish the legacy deal. And you know who knows that? The 2001 Seattle Mariners, who won 116 games, and no one cares. No one talks about that team as being an all-time great team. So this Yankee team, which has been phenomenal, and clearly they've exceeded expectations, they're playing great, they have great intensity, but they have many miles to go before they finish the deal. And there are a lot of teams that could challenge them, and they've been very fortunate, in my opinion, so far in terms of injuries. We'll see how that all manifests as we go.
Well, I believe the Royals are going to pass 56 wins this year, Buster. So there's my optimism as we wrap things up.
I had them at like 75 this year, so I should just shut up when I come to projections on the Royals.
Oh, yeah, I thought they were going to push 500. It's, what do we know? Buster, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it. And stay off of Doug Gottlieb's Twitter timeline, okay? That's Buster Olney. Did you know that about the shorts on backwards, Marco? I was in college at that time.
No, that's a new one for me.
So you know the K fans chant the "Let's go Jayhawks" that chant.
Yep.
He played at Allen. He was a good basketball player. Couldn't shoot, but he was a good ball handler, good point guard. And he had his shorts on backwards when he was playing at Oklahoma State. And the fans all started chanting "Shorts on backwards."
Turn around during a huddle.
The whole team huddled around him during the timeout, so that nobody could see, and he dropped his shorts down real quick, turned them around, and put them on right. It's just kind of a funny thing. Doug Gottlieb, you could tell he was going to be a broadcaster like when he was in college. He was going on Jim Rome's show, doing all kinds of stuff.
Mostly he gets in trouble on Twitter because about any time he tweets something, I like Doug, he'll get – because he got basically kicked out of Notre Dame for using someone's credit card.
Yeah,
that's why he ended up at Oklahoma State. So anytime he says anything judging someone for doing something wrong, every mention below it is like, are you the guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's owned it. I mean, I think we've all done stupid things in our lives and, you know, had to recover from them. But he has a lot of hot takes. He has a lot of hot takes. But that was a pretty strong one when all of a sudden there's a major baseball agency threatening legal action against you.
Doug Gottlieb played point guard. I'm looking these stats up for you. What would be a good free throw percentage for someone?
They say that you should shoot 70%, right? If you're 70% or above, you're a solid free throw shooter, I believe.
So if you shot as a point guard who had the ball in your hands,
I think good free, like really, like if you're over 80%, you're a good free throw shooter.
What would a bad free throw percentage be for a guard? Not like Shaq, but a guard.
Well, I mean, look, I think anything under 70% is bad, but I would say most people probably maybe 60%, you know, is bad.
So like 45% wouldn't be good. That's his career. Never shot 50% from the line in college basketball.
What blows my mind about that is that, like,
it's a weird thing. It was totally weird because he had the ball in his hands all the time.
You're such a
And he
a
was
good,
like eight like, assists a game, and he didn't turn the ball over. I mean, his assist to turnover, all that stuff was great. But, like, at the end of the game, you have to have the ball in your hand, and someone's going to foul you, and he couldn't be that guy.
Well, I just
it's weird.
I could shoot 80% from the free throw line.
I think you could shoot better than 50% in front of fans yelling at you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean,
maybe
like,
not 80.
Yeah, but I mean, I think after you shoot, if you shoot with people yelling at you enough times, that part doesn't matter anymore. It's just about the mechanics of the shot.
It's weird.
And shooting a free throw, such a simple, repeatable motion to me as a non-good basketball player. I averaged under 5 points a game, I believe, at Bishop Ward High School. I did play at Bishop Ward High School, though. You know, humble brag.
Mm-hmm.
I think our record was like 8-20, something like that. The point is, Doug Gottlieb's 1,000 times better basketball player than me. More quicker, more coordinated, stronger, better ball handler, better decision maker. How could you not do something that simple? You know, I can understand it with Shaq. He's just so big. I can understand it with guys that are just like, it's like, you know what? I'm too big. The ball's too small in my hands. I can't be expected to do like a fine motor skill like that. I can understand that. But like a guard.
Yeah, it's wild.
Your whole game is
it
based
was so
on skill.
Weird that you couldn't do that. But I like Doug. And he's now he's mixed up with Casey Close.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll get sued. I don't know. You got to watch what you tweet, kids. Put that down. Remember that stuff.
Now, you
watch
me?
What you tweet.
But why not?
Me?
Sue everybody.
So I can't help you.
Hello?
Yes?
The people that you work with and handle, I probably will sue them too because I'm not
who
getting...
Who do I handle? Who do I... I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I had a terrible accident, sir.
Yo, and who are my clients?
I'm sorry. I'm all upset about this.
Sue everybody. Sue everybody.
Yeah, especially don't make lawyers mad.
No, they'll
sue you. They'll pay themselves.
They'll definitely threaten legal action. There's no doubt about that. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's time to find out who's got this. Presented by Mike DePasquale and the law offices of DePasquale Moore.
It's time to find out who's got this. I'll tell you who's got this. The Kansas City Monarchs have got this because we have a very special event for a very special cause going on tonight at Legends Field. Look, there's nothing better than America's favorite pastime, which is, of course, baseball. Join fellow Alzheimer's advocates at Alzheimer's Awareness Night at the Monarchs tonight, June 30th at Legends Field. Reggie Walker, who was battling Alzheimer's and who was drafted to the Cleveland Indians at the time in 1979, will throw out the first pitch. You can use the promo code ENDALZ, ENDALZ, and a portion of your ticket price will support the Alzheimer's Association. So purchase your tickets at, let me see here, let me make sure I get the website right, tickets.monarchsbaseball.com. 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 And support the Alzheimer's Association. Alzheimer's is a terrible disease, and it's something that that's a great cause. That's a great cause out there. So get out there. If you're looking to maybe get your weekend started a little early, head on out to the Monarchs tonight and celebrate a great cause. So a tip of the cap to the Monarchs. They've got this in terms of trying to help battle a terrible, terrible condition, which I got a buddy whose dad's going through that right now. And
it's the worst. Well, I don't know if it's the worst. A lot of things are awful.
There's a lot of things, but it's a terrible way to go because my buddy, for example, his dad doesn't recognize him.
Yeah,
it's awful. He's got to go take care of his dad, and you can tell how painful it is. For a long time, it would take him a while to get his dad to remember who he was.
And they're doing a lot of research, and hopefully you can help slow. And
yeah,
I don't know if we'll get to reverse yet, but slowing would be good enough at this point for a lot of people.
Keep doing those mental exercises, by the way. They say crossword puzzles, learning a foreign language, picking up a musical instrument, all these types of things they've studied. It's exercising your brain. It's making your brain tired. And doing that, it's not going to 100% prevent it, but it can hold off dementia, Alzheimer's, and some of those things. There's some things you can do to help yourself a little bit. And it's something, by the way, I'm trying to embrace at this stage in my life. You know what phrase I've grown to decide I hate? Is you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Right.
Because this old dog's trying to learn some new tricks. You know what I did last week for the first time ever?
What's that?
Jiu-jitsu.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were joking about that, but you weren't.
No, I did. I do jujitsu now. I do it.
I do jujitsu.
Because
you did it once?
Because I had a class. I'm hoping, I don't know if our kit man at Sporting Kansas City is the guy that coordinated it for us, and I don't know if we're doing the class again this Thursday because the team, or today, because the team's off. But I'm going. Like, I'm hooked. I suck at it, obviously. Like, you know, I was terrible,
mm-hmm.
but I learned a ton in an hour, and it was really fun, and it was different than any other sport I've ever participated in. And I've done, you know, I've gotten in the boxing ring with Steven and got my mouth punched loose by right. Danny Campbell. Striking is different than grappling, you know, than getting out and rolling. They said rolling right. with somebody. It was awesome. It was great. And by the way, the most tired I've been, like when I got done with that hour, I was physically and mentally exhausted. I thought I might throw up on the drive home. So, and I only did it for an hour.
You've done that.
I've thrown up after working out for sure.
Yeah.
And other things. But, you know, I've spent some time dabbling with the ukulele.
Yes.
I know how to play four songs.
You got four of them down.
Yeah.
Which four?
Well,
I like a Beatles song.
Octopus's Garden yeah. by the Beatles. Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. All the Small Things by Blink-182.
That's a great cool. ukulele song.
Everybody says total ukulele yeah, song.
Total.
And then the one that I'm most proud of is Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd.
Yep.
And the reason I learned how to play that is actually because of my buddy James Noble, who lives in Vancouver but is from Derby, Kansas, and I went to KU with, who was diagnosed with stage 4 skin cancer like 6 months before the Chiefs won the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of his all-time favorite songs. And so he was kind of the guy that introduced me to Pink Floyd. And so anytime I ever hear that song, I always think of my yeah. buddy James. And, so when he got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and I was not able to get up and visit him during the pandemic, I got to visit him one time before the pandemic, but once everything got shut down,
mm-hmm.
It's not like it's easy to get to Vancouver from Kansas yeah, City.
Especially as we were just talking about the Buster, you couldn't roll across the borders.
Yeah. Everything's deal. Been kind of shut down. And also, I don't know if you know, but our airport situation doesn't exactly make it easy to get places. Hopefully pretty soon with this new airport, we'll actually be able to go places. I'm just going to say this, too. I know Steven likes to argue with me. He doesn't like to travel. I like to travel. Our airport is the effing worst, and it's going to be awesome. I cannot wait till the new one opens up. I'm so excited about it, and hopefully we actually get some flights places where it's not so hard to get places. But anyways, since I couldn't go visit him, I was trying to come up with a present to give him, or something to do for him to show him, hey, I'm supporting you. Because he was in the fight for his life, right? Like, he was going through this immunotherapy that almost killed him.
You learned Wish You Were Here.
And so I went on YouTube University, and I learned how to play Wish You Were Here. And I can play it.
Did you sing along too?
And I had my daughter and I, we played together, and she sang it with me. I taught her all the words, and we sent him a video and made him cry. How about that?
Oh, so now you just make people cry.
Making people cry.
That's what
but
you do.
I know how to play the ukulele.
See, you'd learn something. I got a ukulele a couple years ago. I like playing it.
I got some chords. I can do some chords.
Yeah.
Certain chords. I'm not very good, you know.
Well, it's simple enough. It's a pretty simple instrument. The weird part is if you've played guitar your whole life, which I've played guitar since I was like 15 years old, the ukulele is an entirely different thing. It looks like a guitar. It's got four strings on it. But it is the shapes you make with your fingers are entirely different to do the same notes, like you know what an A is or a B is or an E, and then it's totally different because the top string on a ukulele is not the fat string.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second string is the fat mm-hmm. string, so it changes everything about what you've had in your head when you play guitar.
Luckily,
so,
I was a tabula rasa.
You just learned it then.
Do you know what that means?
Maybe you learned that one first?
I was a blank slate.
Blank slate.
I was a blank slate,
yeah.
So I didn't have any things that I had to unlearn.
Yeah.
When I learned the ukulele.
It's
I've
really
never
weird.
Played a string instrument before in my life.
I have a ukulele and I have a few guitars and when I play them, it's just your mind has to do something entirely different on it.
That's why it's
wild.
Good for your brain.
Yes.
By the way, do you want to know whether or not people in the sales department listen to our show?
I think I know the answer It's seldom.
Seldom.
Okay.
What time did we probably start this segment?
7:30.
Here, I'll tell you right now. We start at 7:35:25.
7:35:25. What did we talk about to start this segment? We did the Mike's Got This thing. What did we talk about?
I talked about the Alzheimer's.
The Alzheimer's thing and the Monarchs, yeah. Right? 7:39.
Mm-hmm.
Email from Ted Wiley. Hey, Nate. Just wanted to shoot you a reminder to please work in a mention this morning for the Alzheimer's Association. Below is the info.
Thank you. Didn't hear that one.
I do appreciate the reminder, yes. Because I'm not always on top of things. You know, thanks for the
It's good.
Thanks for the reminder. You know what? Here's the deal,
Ted.
Go back
in time.
I've got this. Just like Mike DePasquale, if you get in an accident, Mike's got this. If you need me to do a promo for the Alzheimer's event that's going on at the Monarchs tonight, I've got this. Some people perform well under pressure. Some people rise to the occasion. Some people look forward to pressure. Some people say pressure is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the kind of person Gary Lezak is, because this is one of those times where people are counting on him for a positive weather forecast, because we've got a holiday weekend in front of us. We've got a Kenny Chesney concert on Saturday. We've got Sporting Kansas City on Sunday. We've got fireworks all over town. People are going to be outside doing things, going to the lake. Gary, how do you respond to the kind of pressure that you're under right now to deliver a good weather forecast?
I respond with a dad joke.
Oh, okay. All right. They deflect. That's a good way to do
it. Doesn't
sound right.
Good for the weekend.
All right. Yep. Diffuse the situation with comedy.
What's the difference between a bad joke and a dad joke?
I don't know. What is the difference?
It's when it's apparent.
No.
Oh.
What's the difference between a bad joke and a dad joke?
Okay.
Nothing.
The first letter.
That was definitely a bad joke.
Oh, I love that one. What do ducks like on their tacos?
Quackamole.
Yeah.
Did I get it?
Yeah.
I must be a dad.
You're 0 for 2.
That's 2 for 2.
Okay.
You got
a third one. You want to try to salvage this game with a.
The first one was a little number along the third base line that went fair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they said. The second one was a bunt single.
Okay. Now you need to hit one in the gap or hit one over the fence here.
Mm.
It was a duck snort.
The ground ball to deep to short. It better
leg this one out.
Better not be Bobby. All right. Just read an interesting fact. Bruce Lee had a vegan brother. Rocco Lee.
I think that was a pop out. Bases loaded.
Oh, it lands fair.
No, infield fly rule.
The bases are loaded.
You got another one? You gonna try to do
no,
this?
Let's cut our losses here.
Oh boy, I better. How about this one? This is for the Grand Slam home run on those three amazing little base hits. I was so angry that I threw my keyboard against the wall and parts flew everywhere. That's when the shift hit the fan.
That's a single. Because you did it without actually
that was the
slipping
best
up
one.
And saying the word.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Because that could have happened there. That was dangerous. That was a tough one to try.
There's still nobody out. Should we keep going?
No, it's good. Now, it's going to rain this weekend, isn't it?
I'm going to call for a pinch hitter here if we keep this going.
I know. Come on, Jeff Penner. Where's Jeff Penner when you need him?
He's still scrubbing his driveway. What's the deal? Is it going to rain this weekend?
Come on, Gary.
Okay, yeah, all these events. You know, before the 4th of July, one of the best things that can happen is a good soaking rain. It definitely reduces the fire danger, gets everything soaked and wet beforehand. And it looks like we're going to have a really good soaking rain. It's timed pretty good for Friday night, tomorrow night, and especially Saturday morning during the morning hours. At this time of the year, thunderstorms are most likely late at night and early in the morning in these types of setups. We call those nocturnal thunderstorms or nighttime thunderstorms. And that is the most likely scenario for this weekend, Friday night, Saturday morning. Now, Friday evening could have some problems. They might start developing early. But then early Saturday morning, a chance of a big complex of thunderstorms with very low and severe weather risk. So that would get everything wet. Some of the models have 2 to 5 inches of rain. You can see one of them. Go to kshb.com, and you can see it there. Click on the blog. But anyway, 2 to 5 inches of rain is not out of the question. Now, most of the rain should be gone by Saturday evening. I know we got the Kenny Chesney concert. It should be good for Sporting KC on Sunday and then dry for the 4th of July. So, not bad. Today's high 93. Thank you. The kids are excited. Today's high 93. Tomorrow's high 90 in the 80s on Saturday and Sunday and back up to 92 degrees on the 4th of July. On the 4th of July, fireworks, it gets dark enough for fireworks by 9:40, 9:45. It's usually dark enough, so you have to be patient, kids. As it gets darker at 9, 9:15, 9:30, you just have to wait a few more minutes, and then boom. You have to go, ooh, ah, stay safe, and it looks pretty good. How about that forecast?
That's not bad. I'll take a little rain overnight on Friday because I've been hitting the yard with some water. Because we haven't had much rain in a while, and I do worry a little bit about you don't want grass fires and things like that on the 4th.
Yeah, we don't want anything to catch on fire, so that's good. But I'm supposed to play golf with my family at Dubs Dread at 10:10 on Saturday morning. Is it still going to be raining by then? Will the rain be done by that time in the morning on Saturday?
Well, when you wake up at 7, you've got my text. You text me, and I give you an update.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You better ask for the update. I don't want you to try to forecast on your own.
No,
it's dangerous.
Wouldn't dream of that.
Would never.
Never. Never in a million years. All right. You got big plans this weekend, Gary?
No, I'm working on the 4th, but I'm off this weekend. And some friends are taking me out for my 60th birthday dinner, finally. So that's happening this weekend. So looking forward to that. That's it. No big plans. How about you guys?
Are you, I don't know if people knew this. Nate did some soccer games in California, and you're retiring. So I don't know if people knew that, if the word had gotten out yet. But are you very much looking forward to the fact that in retirement from television, you will not be working on the 4th of July or Christmas or Thanksgiving or every other holiday you've worked in your life?
I can't even imagine. Honestly, I mean, in TV, you guys too, although you guys sometimes take those holidays off.
We do better than TV in that front. I worked in TV, and that's the part I really didn't like.
Yeah, the news goes on, so we are often working. You know, I don't think in my whole 38-year career had Christmas and New Year's off, ever.
Right.
So I usually track Santa on Christmas Eve. I'm usually working on Christmas Day. Usually let the other guys take the holiday, and sometimes I take New Year's Eve off, but not the last few years, anyway, for sure. But no, I am looking forward to that. That's going to be quite different.
That'll be a change for you for sure. Yeah, it's good. I always tell kids when they want to get in that business, that's the way. Thanksgiving's just Thursday, Christmas is just the 25th. Don't get too excited about going and seeing your family all day long. It could be a different thing if you're on television.
And for me to be with Rob Riggle and Eric Stone Street, et cetera, these people that came in and flipped the switch. For the Plaza Lighting, that was 11 straight years I did that, and it was 11 straight Thanksgivings I didn't have Thanksgiving.
That's right.
In any respect. But I enjoyed all that, but that'll be nice, you know. It's just going to it'll be very different. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, I haven't really deeply thought about that topic. Good question.
It'll come to you this Christmas when you retire.
Yes, it will. It definitely will. We'll talk more about that then. All right, guys. December 1st is my last day on KSHB, and December 2nd, I am free. So see how that goes. We'll see how it goes. I got a lot of things I'm working on, as you know, with Weather 2020 and the LRC. This storm coming in this weekend is directly related to one that did produce severe weather April the 4th, 5th. But the jet stream has retreated north, so the chance of severe weather is low, but heavy rain and lightning, chance of that is high. So we'll monitor that closely. That's all I have for you today. Have a great day. I think I went 4 for 4 on my dad jokes, but that's just my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe there was a line drive out. No, not even a line drive, just pop-ups. Mm. All right, here is Pro Partners Healthcare and Dr. Troy Burns.
Thanks, Gary. As you've known for years, Pro Partners is a different kind of family medicine practice that guarantees direct access to your personal physician literally anytime. If you want the peace of mind of having a doctor who's always available, give ProPartners a call or check us out on the web at ProPartnersHealthcare.com.
I think the last one was a broken bat single. Everything else was just
there was zero solid contact.
No.
Hey, before we take a break, we got a segment with intern Namdi coming up. I'm looking forward to what he's got cooked up for us. The Kansas City Chiefs tweeted this out yesterday, and I didn't say anything about it. Yesterday, 39 years ago, Joe Delaney tragically passed away while attempting to save three children, a true hero of the Kansas City Chiefs, and I wish I would have said something about that yesterday. Rest in peace, Joe Delaney, a true hero from the Kansas City Chiefs. We will take a break. We got intern Namdi coming up after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.